Welcome to the next section of the course. In the next section of the course, we have to lay the foundation for a lot of the stuff we're going to cover from this point going forward. And that foundation deals with the idea of probability and the idea of randomness. So that's what we're going to be covering over the next few lectures. Again, some of the concepts may seem a little out of place for right now, but you have to trust me that this is building and laying the foundation for all the later sections that we're going to be looking at. So let's look at the idea of probability and the notion of risk when it comes to statistics. First, we have to talk about the notion of randomness, really the idea of chance. So what do we mean when we say something is random? Well, what we mean when we say something is random is that an outcome would be random if we know the particular outcomes that something could have, but are unsure of which of those outcomes is about to happen. So people throughout history have tried to measure patterns in randomness and answer the question, what would happen if I did this many, many, many times? Which, again, goes to a lot of the things that you've probably thought about in the past or have had to do in previous math classes. Let's imagine you tried flipping a coin. Well, each flip of the coin is completely random. You know what could happen, but you're unsure of the exact specific outcome. So, if your coin is fair, again, that would be evenly weighted, then many flips of the coin would result in getting approximately half of the time heads and half of the time tails, or 50% of the time heads and 50% of the time tails. Well, this leads us into the notion of what we call probability. The probability that an event happens is a numerical measure of the likelihood of that event's occurrence. So it's a number between 0 and 1, where the closer you are to 0, the less likely that event is going to happen, and the closer you are to 1, the more likely the event is going to happen. Of course, right in the middle, just like our flip of the coin, the events are equally likely to happen as compared to unhappen, or not happen, I guess. That would probably be a better way of saying it. So when it came to flipping a coin, we had an equal chance of heads and tails. If we were looking at the probability of me getting a heads and the coin was unfairly weighted towards tails, then my probability of heads would be a little bit lower. That would be the idea. So again, when looking at a notion of probability, these are numbers between 0 and 1. Now, a lot of times people will substitute out percentages for probabilities. Be very careful. Percentages are numbers between 0 and 100. Probabilities are numbers between 0 and 1. So a probability of 0.5 is the same thing as saying a percentage of 50%. But just be mindful of that. With some of the calculations we have to do, we're doing the calculations assuming we have probabilities, numbers between 0 and 1. Awesome. So we have this idea that the probability that an event happens is the numerical measure of how likely that event is going to happen. Well, again, if we're going to be talking about randomness, though, we need to have some idea of the total number of events that could happen. That is what we call the sample space. The sample space is the collection of all, and I mean all, possible outcomes in a random process. For something as simple as a flip of a coin, we would have two possible outcomes, heads or tails. For example, the roll of a dice would have six possible outcomes, the numbers 1 through 6. But when you look at a sample space, if you were to sum up all of the probabilities for that random process across all of the outcomes in the sample space, it has to sum to 1. Again, if you have a probability of 0.5 of getting heads and a probability of 0.5 of getting tails, well, since those are the only two possible outcomes, then they have to sum up all those probabilities to be 1. You're not going to have some small probability of some third random outcome happening, because again, heads and tails are the only two possible outcomes we're allowing. Now, an event is a collection of one or more outcomes from a random process. Again, this event cannot be predicted with certainty. It's some notion of random. We have a possible set of outcomes, an event. We're not sure which events are going to happen, even though we know what could happen. And so each event has a chance of not happening. So the probability of an event A, for example, happening, is denoted by the big capital P, parentheses A. So example, when flipping a fair coin, what is the probability of landing on heads? When rolling a fair dice, what is the probability of rolling a six? Those would be examples of events, and those events have a probability. So the probability of a fair coin landing on heads would be 0.5. The probability of the event of rolling a six on a fair six-sided dice would be 1/6, or 0.167. Now, if a random process actually consists of a sequence of multiple steps, let's just say we have k steps, which there are a certain number of outcomes per step, then the total number of outcomes is the multiplication of these. So, for example, let's imagine step 1 has n outcomes, little n1 outcomes. Step 2 has little n2 outcomes. Step 3 has little n3 outcomes, and so on and so forth. Well, the total number of outcomes would be the multiplication of all of those little n's. Now, I know that you might be thinking, well, what do you mean by this? Well, let me give you an example. It may help. Let's look at what we call a two-step random process. And in all honesty, multi-step random processes are really easily visualized with what we call tree diagrams like you see here. So let's imagine your two-step random process is you flipping a coin 2 times. Okay, well, let's go back here. Step 1 of me flipping a coin has 2 possible outcomes. Step 2 of me flipping a coin also has 2 possible outcomes. Again, we flip a coin twice. So if I have 2 outcomes from the first step and 2 outcomes from the second step, then that means I have 4, 2 times 2, total possible outcomes that can come from me flipping a coin 2 times. Again, those 4 outcomes are listed here. So imagine we flip a coin. Again, we can get either heads or tails. So let's imagine we get heads. Okay, so we got heads on our first flip. But again, we flip another coin. With that second flip, we can again get heads or tails. So that means we could get a heads followed by a heads followed by a tails followed by a heads, and a tails followed by a tails. Notice we have 4 possible outcomes. Again, the first step had 2 possible outcomes. The second step had 2 possible outcomes, the 2 flips of the coin, would lead to 4 possible outcomes in all. I invite you to try this exact same thing with flipping a coin once and rolling a 6-sided die once. Step 1 would be flipping a coin. Step 2 would be rolling a 6-sided die. Step 1 has 2 outcomes. Step 2 has 6 outcomes. So we would expect to have 12 total outcomes that we could have from flipping a coin and rolling a dice. I invite you to try on your own and figure out what the tree diagram would look like. What would those 12 outcomes be from flipping a coin and rolling a dice? So how do we assign probabilities to these outcomes? Well, the probabilities of an event occurring, remember, have to be between 0 and 1. And we know that the sum of probabilities across all the events must equal 1. But how do we, again, assign these actual probabilities? Well, there are 3 typical methods for assigning probabilities to events. We call them the classical method, the relative frequency method, and the subjective method. So let's go through each one of them. The classical method of assigning probabilities assumes that all events have equally likely outcomes. This goes back to our coin flip. So if we had a flip of a coin, there's two possible outcomes, so the probability is going to be the same across those two outcomes. So if an experiment has n possible outcomes, then each outcome gets a probability of 1 over n. Again, for our coin example, there were two outcomes. Each outcome gets a probability of 1/2, or 0.5. When it comes to rolling a dice, we have six possible outcomes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. Again, we're going to assume the classical method. We're going to assume that each outcome is equally likely. So that means that each of those outcomes has a 1 in 6, or a 1/6 chance of actually happening. This is probably the most predominant way that people look at when assigning probabilities. Another way, though, is what we call the relative frequency method. The relative frequency method of assigning probabilities assigns probabilities based on experimentation or historical data. For example, you don't believe that the dice I gave you is actually fairly weighted, so you ask me to roll it 100 times. Once I roll it 100 times, let's imagine you get the following. 10 times, I got a value of 1. 25 times, I got a value of 2. 42 times, I got a value of 3. 7 times, I got a value of 4. 10 times, I got a value of 5. And 6 times, I got a value of 6. Well, with those 100 rolls of the dice, those experimental probabilities in the third column would be what we think the probabilities of the actual roll in the first column are. Notice how a 3 has a probability of 0.42. Again, these experimental probabilities in the right-hand column are definitely not equal to each other. So, that being the case, you may not believe that I actually have a fair dice anymore. Again, if you assume fair, each dice would have a probability of 1/6, or 0.167. Here, that's not the case with our 100 rolls. Now, let's imagine, though, that circumstances might change rapidly in the events you're trying to build probabilities for. So you don't want to just use equal probabilities, and you don't want to just use historical data. Well, you can use both a combination of historical data as well as experience and intuition about how likely an event will occur, and that is called the subjective method. Now, the best probability methods that are out there are typically a combination of subjective as well as classical and relative frequencies. An example of someone using a subjective method would be someone like a meteorologist. They can look back at the historical data and say, you know, historically this would imply that there's a 20% chance or a probability of 0.2 of it raining today. But based on my experience, on what I've seen being a meteorologist in this area, or based on my intuition, I think the probability is actually a little bit higher. I'm going to say the probability is a 0.4 instead. That would be an example of the subjective method. So let's summarize real quick. An outcome is random if we know the particular outcomes that something could have, but are unsure of which of those outcomes is about to happen. Now, the probability that an event happens is a numerical measure of likelihood of that event's occurrence, and we typically get probabilities through one of the three methods we talked about: the classical method, which assigns an equal probability to every outcome; the relative frequency method, which uses historical data and experimentation to figure out the probabilities of each outcome; and the subjective method, which uses more experience and intuition to assign those probabilities. Now, an event is a collection of one or more outcomes from a process whose result cannot be predicted with certainty, again, has a probability that we're trying to calculate. Now let's finish off this lecture by talking about the law of large numbers, something you may have heard about in the past. So let's talk about what that is, because this can be something that's rather confusing to a lot of people when it comes to randomness. So, again, when flipping a coin, each flip is completely random. You're not quite sure if we're going to get heads or tails. Now, just because, though, that we're not sure what's going to happen in the short run with a single flip, in the long run, the flip of a coin is relatively predictable. In the long run, I expect to get about half of the time heads and about half of the time tails. But each individual flip, I'm not sure if it's going to be heads or tails. So let's imagine I tossed a coin 500 times, and I recorded the proportion of heads as I went along. Early on, the proportion of times I got heads, as you can see, changed drastically. It started at zero after my first flip, because I started with tails, and then it progressively changed. And you can see, the more and more flips that I did of the coin, the closer and closer and closer it got to 0.5 in terms of the proportion of times heads was achieved. But again, it took 500 flips of this coin for it to really start getting close to a 0.5 in terms of the proportion of times heads occurred. So you have to be very, very careful. The law of large numbers would state that as the number of trials increases, in the long run, and I mean the long run, the proportion for a certain event gets closer and closer and closer to a single value. So again, if we flip a coin hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of times, the proportion of times it lands on heads, or tails, is going to get closer and closer and closer to 50%. Again, though, this is in the long run. It takes hundreds of flips for this to be able to actually happen. So you have to be very, very careful of this. Now, as it gets closer and closer and closer to that single value, we would consider that value the probability of the event. This would be an example of using experimentation, that relative frequency method, to be able to answer the question of what the probability should be. However, there is a myth around this, a myth of short-run predictability. Chance behavior is unpredictable in the short run, but very predictable in the long run. Unfortunately, this is counterintuitive to most people. Let me give you an example. Which of the following outcomes of flipping a fair coin, so it should be fair, four times is more likely to happen? Me getting a head, followed by two tails, followed by a head. Or me getting four straight heads. Which of those outcomes is more probable? You might have a tendency of saying the one on the left is more probable, but in actuality, they are the same. Let's take a look. Let's take a look at our tree diagram. So again, I'm flipping a coin four times. So let's imagine I flip a coin, I get heads, then I get tails, then I get tails, then I get heads. That's one of the many possible outcomes that could occur. Specifically, there are 16 possible outcomes. I'm only showing you the top eight. So again, flipping a coin and getting heads, then tails, then tails, then heads has a specific outcome. Now, I'm not saying getting two heads and two tails. I'm saying getting that exact outcome. First heads, second tails, third tails, fourth heads. Well, that actually has the same number of occurrences as getting four straight heads. Flip heads, flip heads, flip heads, flip heads. Again, that may be counterintuitive to a lot of people. The same kind of myth applies in sports. We see it all the time. This is the myth of the hot hand. Again, chance behavior is unpredictable in the short run, but predictable in the long run. Let's imagine a player in basketball makes four straight shots, as compared to making one, then misses two, then makes one again. It has the same idea of the coins. Let's imagine each time they took a shot, they had the same probability of making it. Well, in four straight shots they made it, as compared to they made it, they missed twice, and they made it, that would have the exact same chance of actually occurring. But again, in sports, we don't think this. We think, oh my goodness, that player is making all their shots. They must have a hot hand. Quickly, feed them more. And then inevitably, as you do that, things revert back to their natural long-term predictability, and eventually the hot hand goes quote-unquote cold. This all revolves around the idea of the mythical law of averages. The law of large numbers is a real thing. The law of averages actually isn't. You've probably heard people refer to the law of averages. There is no actual law of averages. It's a myth. Again, there's no law of averages because chance behavior is unpredictable in the short run, but very predictable in the long run. So let's imagine, you've probably heard a situation like this before. A couple has four kids. They're all boys. So you're probably thinking to yourself with their fifth kid, you know what? They must be due to have a girl. However, that's not the case. There's still a 50-50 chance that that fifth kid will be a girl. Again, chance behavior is unpredictable in the short run. It's only predictable in the long run. So let's imagine there actually is a 50-50 chance of boys and girls in terms of a pregnancy. Over hundreds of pregnancies, we would expect to see about 50% boys, 50% girls. But over four or five pregnancies, you could have a lot of variability. You could have four boys, five boys, and it's still not going to drive that fifth child to be more likely to be a girl. So again, there is no such thing as the law of averages. Unfortunately, this is counterintuitive to most people. The law of averages doesn't exist. Things will even out in the long run, but chances of outcomes do not change. And so since those chances do not change, it's not like you're more likely to get a girl, or the player is more likely to be able to make a shot, or the coin is more likely to be able to land on tails now that I've flipped four straight heads. That's not the case. Each individual outcome still has the same chances. It's just if you observe those chances over hundreds or thousands of trials, it will eventually equal itself out. So let's summarize. Chance behavior is unpredictable in the short run, but it is predictable in the long run. The law of large numbers is a true law. It states that the number of independent trials increases. In the long run, the proportion for a certain event gets closer and closer and closer to the actual probability of that event. The law of averages, though, does not exist. Things even out in the long run, but chances of outcomes do not change. So in the short run, things are still unpredictable. Sorry. So that is the end of this lecture. I look forward to seeing you in the next.